Who does he think he is, sitting up on his own with his filthy white badges? They might agree with me, with Grishnak, their trusted messenger, and I, Grishnak, say this. Saruman is a fool, and a dirty, treacherous fool, but the great eye is on him.
Swine, is it? How do you folk like being called swine by the muckrakers of a dirty little wizard? It's orc flesh they eat, I'll warrant.
Many loud yells in orc speech answered him, and the ringing clash of weapons being drawn. Cautiously Pippin rolled over, hoping to see what would happen. His guards had gone to join in the fray. In the twilight, he saw a large black orc, probably Ugluk, standing facing Grishnak, a short, crook-legged creature, very broad and with long arms that hung almost to the ground. Round them were many smaller goblins. Pippin supposed that these were the ones from the north. They had drawn their knives and swords, but hesitated to attack Ugluk. Ugluk shouted, and a number of other orcs of nearly his own size ran up. Then suddenly, without warning, Ugluk sprang forwards, and with two swift strokes swept the heads off two of his opponents. Grishnak stepped aside and vanished into the shadows. The others gave way, and one stepped backwards and fell over Merry's prostrate form with a curse. Yet that probably saved his life, for Ugluk's followers leapt over him and cut down another with their broad-bladed swords. It was the yellow-fanged guard. His body fell right on top of Pippin, still clutching its long, saw-edged knife.
"Put up your weapons," shouted Ugluk, "and let's have no more nonsense. We go straight west from here and down the stair, from there straight to the downs, then along the river to the forest, and we march day and night. That clear?"
"Now," thought Pippin, "if only it takes that ugly fellow a little while to get his troop under control, I've got a chance." A gleam of hope had come to him. The edge of the black knife had snicked his arm, and then slid down to his wrist. He felt the blood trickling onto his hand, but he also felt the cold touch of steel against his skin. The orcs were getting ready to march again, but some of the northerners were still unwilling, and the Isengarders slew two more before the rest were cowed. There was much cursing and confusion. For the moment Pippin was unwatched. His legs were securely bound, but his arms were only tied about the wrists, and his hands were in front of him. He could move them both together, though the bonds were cruelly tight. He pushed the dead orc to one side, then, hardly daring to breathe, he drew the knot of the wrist cord up and down against the blade of the knife. It was sharp, and the dead hand held it fast. The cord was cut. Quickly Pippin took it in his fingers and knotted it again into a loose bracelet of two loops and slipped it over his hands. Then he lay very still.
"Pick up those prisoners," shouted Ugluk. "Don't play any tricks with them. If they're not alive when we get back, someone else will die too."
An orc seized Pippin like a sack, put its head between his tied hands, grabbed his arms and dragged them down until Pippin's face was crushed against its neck. Then it jolted off with him. Another treated Merry in the same way. The orc's claw-like hand gripped Pippin's arms like iron. The nails bit into him. He shut his eyes and slipped back into evil dreams. Suddenly he was thrown onto the stony floor again. It was early night, but the slim moon was already falling westward. They were on the edge of a cliff that seemed to look out over a sea of pale mist. There was a sound of water falling nearby.
"The scouts have come back at last," said an orc close at hand.
"Well, what did you discover?" growled the voice of Ugluk.
"Only a single horseman, and he made off westward. All's clear now."
"No, I dare say. But how long, you fools? You should have shot him. He'll raise the alarm. The cursed horse breeders will hear of us by morning. Now we'll have to leg it double quick."
A shadow bent over Pippin. It was Ugluk,
Sit up, said the orc. My lads are tired of lugging you about. We've got to climb down, and you must use your legs. Be careful now. No crying out. No trying to escape. We have ways of paying for tricks that you won't like, though they won't spoil your usefulness for the master.
He cut the thongs round Pippin's legs and ankles, picked him up by his hair, and stood him on his feet. Pippin fell down, and Ugluk dragged him up by his hair again. Several orcs laughed. Ugluk thrust a flask between his teeth and poured some burning liquid down his throat. He felt a hot, fierce glow flow through him. The pain in his legs and ankles vanished. He could stand.
Now for the other, said Ugluk.
Pippin saw him go to Merry, who was lying close by, and kick him. Merry groaned. Seizing him roughly, Ugluk pulled him into a sitting position and tore the bandage off his head. Then he smeared the wound with some dark stuff out of a small wooden box. Merry cried out and struggled wildly. The orcs clapped and hooted.
Can't take his medicine, they jeered. Doesn't know what's good for him.
Aye, we shall have some fun later.
But at the moment, Ugluk wasn't engaged in sport. He needed speed and had to humor unwilling followers. He was healing Merry in orc fashion, and his treatment worked swiftly. When he'd forced a drink from his flask down the hobbit's throat, cut his leg bonds, and dragged him to his feet, Merry stood up, looked pale but grim and defiant, and very much alive. The gash in his forehead gave him no more trouble, but he bore a brown scar to the end of his days.
"Hello, Pippin," he said. "So you've come on this little expedition, too? Where do we get bed and breakfast?"
"Now then," said Ugluk, "none of that. Hold your tongues. No talk to one another. Any trouble will be reported at the other end, and he'll know how to pay you. You'll get bed and breakfast, all right, more than you can stomach."
The orc band began to descend a narrow ravine leading down into the misty plain below. Merry and Pippin, separated by a dozen orcs or more, climbed down with them. At the bottom they stepped onto grass, and the hearts of the hobbits rose.
"Now straight on," shouted Ugluk. "West and a little north, follow Lugdush."
"But what are we going to do at sunrise?" said some of the northerners.
"Go on running," said Ugluk. "What do you think? Sit on the grass and wait for the white skins to join the picnic?"
"But we can't run in the sunlight."
"You'll run with me behind you," said Ugluk. "Run, or you'll never see your beloved holes again. By the White Hand, what's the use of sending out mountain maggots on a trip only half-trained? Run, curse you, run while night lasts."
Then the whole company began to run with the long, loping strides of orcs. They kept no order, thrusting, jostling and cursing, yet their speed was very great. Each hobbit had a guard of three. Pippin was far back in the line. He wondered how long he would be able to go on at this pace. He had had no food since the morning. One of his guards had a whip. But at present the orc liquor was still hot in him. His wits, too, were wide awake. Every now and again there came into his mind, unbidden, a vision of the keen face of Strider, bending over a dark trail and running behind. But what could even a ranger see except a confused trail of orc feet? His own little prints and Merry's were overwhelmed by the trampling of the iron-shod shoes before them and behind them and about them. They had gone only a mile or so from the cliff when the land sloped down into a wide, shallow depression where the ground was soft and wet. Mist lay there, pale, glimmering in the last rays of the sickle moon. The dark shapes of the orcs in front grew dim, and then were swallowed up.
"Aye, steady now," shouted Ugluk from the rear.
A sudden thought leapt into Pippin's mind, and he acted on it at once. He swerved aside to the right, and dived out of the reach of his clutching guard, head first into the mist. He landed sprawling on the grass.
"Halt!"
yelled Ugluk. There was for a moment turmoil and confusion. Pippin sprang up and ran. but the orcs were after him. Some suddenly loomed up right in front of him.
No hope of escape, thought Pippin. But there is a hope that I've left some of my own marks unspoiled on the wet ground.
He groped with his two tied hands at his throat and unclasped the brooch of his cloak. Just as long arms and hard claws seized him, he let it fall.
There, I suppose it'll lie until the end of time, he thought. I don't know why I did it. If the others have escaped, they've probably all gone with Frodo.
A whip-thong curled round his legs, and he stifled a cry.
Enough, shouted Ugluk, running up. He's still got to run a long way yet. Make them both run. Just use the whip as a reminder. But that's not all, he snarled, turning to Pippin. I shan't forget. Payment is only put off. Leg it.
Neither Pippin nor Merry remembered much of the later part of the journey. Evil dreams and evil waking were blended into a long tunnel of misery, with hope growing ever fainter behind. They ran and they ran, striving to keep up the pace set by the orcs, licked every now and again with a cruel thong cunningly handled. If they halted or stumbled, they were seized and dragged for some distance. The warmth of the orc draught had gone. Pippin felt cold and sick again. Suddenly he fell face downward on the turf. Hard hands with rending nails gripped and lifted him. He was carried like a sack once more, and darkness grew about him. Whether the darkness of another night, or a blindness of his eyes, he couldn't tell. Dimly he became aware of voices clamoring. It seemed that many of the orcs were demanding a halt. Ugluk was shouting. He felt himself flung to the ground, and he lay as he fell, till black dreams took him. But he didn't long escape from pain. Soon the iron grip of merciless hands was on him again. For a long time he was tossed and shaken, and then slowly the darkness gave way, and he came back to the waking world and found that it was morning. Orders were shouted, and he was thrown roughly on the grass. There he lay for a while, fighting with despair. His head swam, but from the heat in his body he guessed that he'd been given another draught. An orc stooped over him and flung him some bread and a strip of raw dried flesh. He ate the stale bread hungrily, but not the meat. He was famished, but not yet so famished as to eat flesh flung to him by an orc, the flesh of he dared not guess what creature. He sat up and looked about. Merry was not far away. They were by the banks of a swift, narrow river. Ahead mountains loomed. A tall peak was catching the first rays of the sun. A dark smudge of forest lay on the lower slopes before them. There was much shouting and debating among the orcs. A quarrel seemed on the point of breaking out again between the northerners and the Isengarders. Some were pointing back away south, and some were pointing eastward.
Very well, said Ugluk. Leave them to me, then. No killing, as I've told you before. But if you want to throw away what we've come all the way to get, throw it away. I'll look after it. Let the fighting Uruk-hai do the work as usual. If you're afraid of the white skins, run, run. There's the forest, he shouted, pointing ahead. Get to it. It's your best hope. Off you go, and quick, before I knock a few more heads off to put some sense into the others.
There was some cursing and scuffling, and then most of the northerners broke away and dashed off, over 100 of them, running wildly along the river towards the mountains. The hobbits were left with the Isengarders, a grim, dark band, 40 at least of large, swart, slant-eyed orcs with great bows and short, broad-bladed swords. A few of the larger and bolder northerners remained with them.
Now we'll deal with Grishnak, said Ugluk.
But some even of his own followers were looking uneasily southwards.
I know, growled Ugluk. The cursed horse boys have got wind of us. But that's all your fault, Snaga. You and the other scouts ought to have your ears cut off. But we are the fighters. We'll feast on horse flesh yet, or something better.
At that moment, Pippin saw why some of the troop had been pointing eastward. From that direction there now came hoarse cries, and there was Grishnak again,
and at his back a couple of score of others like him, long-armed, crooked-leg orcs. They had a red eye painted on their shields. Ugluk stepped forward to meet them.
"So you've come back," he said. "Thought better of it, eh?"
"I've returned to see that orders are carried out and the prisoners safe," answered Grishnak.
"Indeed," said Ugluk. "Waste of effort. I'll see that orders are carried out in my command. And what else did you come back for? You went in a hurry. Did you leave anything behind?"
"I left a fool," snarled Grishnak. "But there were some stout fellows with him, and they're too good to lose. I knew you'd lead them into a mess. I've come to help them."
"Splendid," laughed Ugluk. "But unless you've got some guts for fighting, you've taken the wrong way. Lugbor's was your road. The Whiteskins are coming. What's happened to your precious Nazgul? Has he had another mount shot under him? Now, if you've brought him along, that might have been useful, if these Nazgul are all they make out."
"Nazgul, Nazgul," shouted Grishnak, shivering and licking his lips, as if the word had a foul taste that he savoured painfully. "You speak of what is deep beyond the reach of your muddy dreams, Ugluk," he said. "Nazgul? Ah, all that they make out. One day you'll wish that you hadn't said that, ape,"
he snarled fiercely.
"You ought to know that they're the apple of the great eye, but the winged Nazgul, not yet, not yet. He won't let them show themselves across the great river yet. Not too soon. They're for the war and other purposes."
"You seem to know a lot," said Ugluk. "More than is good for you, I guess. Perhaps those in Lugbor's might wonder how and why. But in the meantime, the Uruk-hai of Isengard can do the dirty work as usual. Don't stand slavering there. Get your rabble together. The other swine are legging it to the forest. You'd better follow. You wouldn't get back to the great river alive. Right, off the mark. Now, I'll be on your heels."
The Isengarders seized Merry and Pippin again and slung them on their backs. Then the troop started off. Hour after hour they ran, pausing now and again only to sling the hobbits to fresh carriers, either because they were quicker and hardier, or because of some plan of Grishnak's. The Isengarders gradually passed through the orcs of Mordor, and Grishnak's folk closed in behind. Soon they were gaining also on the northerners ahead. The forest began to draw nearer. Pippin was bruised and torn. His aching head was grated by the filthy jowl and hairy ear of the orc that held him. Immediately in front were bowed backs, and tough, thick legs going up and down, up and down, unresting, as if they were made of wire and horn, beating out the nightmare seconds of an endless time. In the afternoon, Ugluk's troop overtook the northerners. They were flagging in the rays of the bright sun, winter sun shining in a pale, cool sky though it was. Their heads were down and their tongues lolling out.
"Maggots," jeered the Isengarders. "You're cooked. The Whiteskins will catch you and eat you. They're coming."
A cry from Grishnak showed that this was not mere jest. Horsemen, riding very swiftly, had indeed been sighted, still far behind, but gaining on the orcs, gaining on them like a tide over the flats on folk straying in quicksand. The Isengarders began to run with the redoubled pace that astonished Pippin. A terrific spurt, it seemed, for the end of a race. Then he saw that the sun was sinking, falling behind the misty mountains. Shadows reached over the land. The soldiers of Mordor lifted their heads and also began to put on speed. The forest was dark and close. Already they had passed a few outlying trees. The land was beginning to slope upwards ever more steeply, but the orcs didn't halt. Both Ugluk and Grishnak shouted, spurring them on to a last effort.